You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Come feel what you need when what you really want inside. people
you gonna turn to next? Tell
get
me.
People.
You gotta take a look at yourself.
Yeah.
Get some people.
Where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
Me what your life is.
What's with your life?
Running like a rare disease.
Running like a rare disease. Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa, our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity. Because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and pride.
This call may be recorded or transcribed.
We pledge our nation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi, Hotep family. Hope everything is well with you today. Hope we can have a good day, a good weekend. Of course, this is the holiday weekend, holy weekend, as they like to call it. We'll talk about that briefly. But I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do, regardless. You know, I know that Easter is another good time for family to come together and have a Easter meal and that kind of thing. You know, I hear you. So, this is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcasts. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs dated and titled. Also, too, you don't have to go to TuneIn anymore, bump them. Just go right to timeforanawakening.com. Time for an Awakening. You can hear this program that's going on right now, live. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. Right side of the page is the link. Click on that, and you can hear the program. Okay. Other program we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., and all times are going to give our Eastern times. On Thursdays, from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., the Black Liberation Movement, Mississippi on the Move, with Brother Patrick Lumumba, the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club, from 7 to 8 on Thursdays. Tonight, Friday, 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturday, 7 p.m. to 9, from 7 to 9 on Saturday, the Sankofa Elders Council. And then on Sunday at 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening. Once again, with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses. WeBuyBlack.com. Time for an awakening. That's right. Time for awakening, right? All right. I'm just messing, family. Okay, here we go. Africa for the Africans. Brother Bomani Taihemba is gone. That's right. He left for Liberia and Morocco today to April 9th. And so when he gets back, we'll talk about his trip and other upcoming trips that he has. We see he has added some to the list of trips that he's going to go to. So March 29th, today, to April 9th, Liberia and Morocco. July 11th to July 23rd, Ghana. November 21st to December 2nd, Kemet. December 24th,
to January 4th, 2025, Azinha. April 3rd to April 13th, Senegal and Gambia. April 4th to April 15th, 2025. Man, that's... Are those days conflicting or what? Okay. I'm looking at it right, family. I'm looking at it right. I'm not sure. Well, I have my brother figure that one out because that doesn't look right. The dates are the same. Senegal and Gambia, April 3rd to the 13th. Liberia and Morocco, April 4th to the 15th. Both 2025. So I haven't figured that out. Ghana, May 24th to June 5th. And then November 21st to December 1st, 2025, Brazil. Brothers and sisters, if you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to YouTube. No, don't do that. Go to Facebook. Go to Facebook.com to see pictures of previous tours. If you want to see videos, now go to YouTube.com/Bomani2007. Africa for the Africans.org. Ashe. Habesha. Habesha Incorporated. Habesha stands for helping Africa by establishing schools at home and abroad. And of course, in Ghana, they have the Kashi Project. And it's just beautiful. Just go to HabeshaIncorporated.org, go to the website, and you can see for yourself the great work that the brothers and sisters are doing in this community here in the Atlanta area and on the continent. HabeshaIncorporated.org. The Ledge Group, Land for the Environmental Development for Group Economics. It has it deals in the four areas of human necessity, human essential, which is food, water, clothing, and shelter. Food, water, clothing, and shelter. And he provides projects on 12. He has 12 projects that are happening on 6 countries with over 170 employees and over 260 members. Brothers and sisters, become a member of the Ledge Group, Land for the Environmental Development for Group Economics. The Minister of Wellness, is in Kenya. And he sent me pictures. It's beautiful. And, of course, go to his website, theministerofwellness.com. Theministerofwellness.com. Brother Nathaniel Jordan. And you see some of the products he has. And there's a free ebook that you can get. Theministerofwellness.com. Smile Pharmacy, SMAIFARMACY. Smile Pharmacy, contact Brother Jabril at, you can give him a call at 770-765-7751. That's 770-765-7751. Smile Pharmacy, SMAIFARMACY. The Moses West Foundation, what this brother has done and continues to do is a blessing to all of us, to humanity, basically, yes. And the Moses West Foundation's mission is an innovator in global sustainability, guided by the vision of our founder, Mother Moses West, that clean water is a fundamental human right. Our mission is to leverage cutting-edge atmospheric water generator, the AWG. Just remember, family, the AWG technology to provide essential water access, foster community development, and promote environmental responsibility. The Moses West Foundation. All right. Us Lifting Us. Last night was the Us Lifting Us radio broadcast on blogtalkradio.com/ULU, Us Lifting Us. Their Thursday night broadcast from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Thursday night. It's a Thursday night broadcast. And the number to call to listen or to give questions, comments, or concerns is 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. the Homeland Village and Cultural Gift Shop. Brother Abijah, he's got it going on, family. He's open from Tuesday through Sunday, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. That's right. Even he has a vegan, I was going to say, no, Wadada's serves vegan food tomorrow and Sunday. Brother Abijah, he serves vegan food every day because he's got a restaurant on the premises. That's right. It's everything. Clothes, furniture, jewelry, you name it. Homeland Village and Cultural Gift Shop, Macon, Georgia. Give them a call at 478-256-1166. That's 478-256-1166. Homeland Village and Cultural Gift Shop, Macon, Georgia. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End, right here on Ralph David Abernathy, serving health foods and dry goods. They have vegan dishes on Saturday and Sunday. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. Want to give them a call? Call them at 404-444-1635. That's 404-444-1635. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, Mama Nia. Can't say enough about how beautiful this sister is and what she does. She has a fine selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, t-shirts, figurines, and so much more. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Give her a call at 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore and Coffee Bar located in Lithonia, which is east of Atlanta off of I-20. You take I-20 going east, going towards Augusta, and you take exit 74. Take the exit, make a left. Now you're going north, and you about a mile, and on the left will be the Black Dot Cultural Center Bookstore and Coffee Bar. My good brother, Gassim Diajamu. And you can give him a call at 770-305-6373. That's 770-305-6373. Brothers and sisters, there's light in the Black Dot. Jump back in your ride, head back the other way. Now you're going south on Main Street in Lithonia. You head back to the I-20 Interstate, make another left. Now you're still headed east. But the next exit, exit 75, Turner Hill Road, you want to take that exit, make a right, three lights, make another right, and on the left will be the new Black Wall Street Market. The new Black Wall Street Market on the left. And Sun Goddess Scents. Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop located 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia, inside the International Discount Mall Booth 225. That's right. That's my good sister, Shelly Amonset. And give her a call at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop. And, of course, I always got to mention Sister Gabby and what she's doing in Haiti. I say all of these things, all these announcements, hopefully that maybe somebody's listening and will be understanding enough to go ahead and do more research and hopefully maybe make that a charity or an entity that you do give a monetary gift to or whatever the case may be. Sonjay-Haiti, S-O-N-J-E-Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org. Sonjay-Haiti.org. Great work that she's doing. Baba Baruti Mama Yah. That's right. Akabin Institute. And they're doing great work. Can't say enough. Really. Okay. The Inyasa Sim. You know, I wasn't here Wednesday. Sorry about that, family. But I'm glad to be here today. Wasn't here Wednesday, but I'm glad to be here today. Since I wasn't here Wednesday, I'll read the Inyasa Sim for those particular days in March 26. In fact, the reason why I want to definitely read this one because this quote here is by Ra Nefer Amon. Ra Nefer Amon is the Shekema Shekema. Yeah, Aser Set Society. And he was in attendance when they had the debate on the Exodus. He was the one helping to prove that the Exodus never happened. It never happened. It is not historical. We'll go through that because, you know, that's one of the things that my favorite book, Urugu, taught me, that the European, the Caucasian Christianity wanted to make sure everybody else's shit was a myth, was a lie, was a fairy tale. But what they presented, what they brought, was historical, was factual, was substantiated. You're right. Ra Nefer Amon. It is not enough to understand. You must have the power of realization. Warriors have clarity, and even though these are separate issues in terms of the messages needed to be conveyed, they know that they have the responsibility to make African people and our enemies understand our situation as well as what must be done to correct it. Realization, however, is another issue. It remains unattained because much of their energy is consumed in fighting the crippling menticide they harbor that thieves among our people. This internalized, self-defeating, self-hatred hampers unbridled courage, and this directly interferes with true realization. True realization knows neither excuses nor stunting qualifications. Most warriors understand that they must speak to the people, friend or foe, in the language that they understand in order for them to understand. They also know that silence also speaks. So while they have no conversation for the murderers of our people, they know that they must somehow be made to grasp the horror of the Ma'afa so they can see that they are uncomfortable and must reciprocally be destroyed in order to return order to Yah's. This position will never come in the form of words because we know that human speech is incapable of expressing this level of righteous rage. Moreover, the wrong of what has been done to us so far beyond their comprehension and admittance that using words to communicate it to them would make no sense and make us again fools. Nonetheless, once warriors fully understand and make themselves completely understood, realization will naturally come. Affirm, my understanding and actualizations are inseparable. Affirm, my understandings and actualizations are inseparable. March 27th. The question that seems not whether or not a critical approach is political, but whose politics it represents. Fred Lee Hoard. Every utterance, every thought, every behavior is political. Therefore, withholding or being withheld judgment because we do not, and in all probability will never, know the real thoughts of the mental sidelists twirling around us, leaving us defenseless against those who are intent on infusing confusion into our lives. Such a mentality leaves you unable to effectively throw stones at those who would kill your spirit and or physical manifestations without punctuation. It leaves you without the ability to sanely pursue life in a reality built on death. It may give you a sense of fairness, of momentary righteous balance, but it leaves you defenseless against the inheritors and carriers of derangement and their menticidal mercenary pets. Right or wrong, everyone judges. There is far too much uncertainty and stimuli in any society not to. Moreover, even if this were not the case, everything is still political, even our so-called objectivity. So never be afraid to judge what is wrong as long as that judgment favors African people, as we naturally are. Worrying about any error in judgment can wait until that wrong rights itself. Speaking of judgment, our personal power over our uncompromising center interpretation of reality should extend far beyond ourselves to everything we encounter. As much, there is absolutely no reason why Urugu should not be judged as one. Some would argue that this makes us prejudiced because it is a collective judgment of individuals. However, this argument is unscientific because we cannot be prejudiced against Urugu. Prejudice is to judge with no prior knowledge. We know Urugu. I say, we know them. Prejudice is to judge with no prior knowledge. That's prejudice. We know these people. I say, affirm my politics are purely African. You know it. Affirm my politics are purely African. March 28th. Be courageous if it would be true. Truth and courage go together. African proverb. All an earnest warrior can ask for is strength, courage, and vision to say what needs to be said so that none within earshot can say that they did not know and therefore had no reason to act against evil. All that she or he can ask is that they be allowed to deliver the righteously enraged word through their actions for as long as they are mentally and physically able to do so. Although anger keeps the company of many of us, righteous rage comes from a place only warriors know because only they understand from an African center the cultural politics of this war. And anyone who truly understands these cultural politics from an African center is necessarily a warrior. There is no such person as a warrior who was not righteously enraged. Ashe. Constantly, with every waking moment, warriors strive to improve on what they need to do better and to affirm their vision and power within a righteous rage. Rightfully and righteously, they have been humbled in their search for our truth. They have sworn to tell the truth, the whole truth, the hard truth, the untainted truth, the ancestral truth to every African worth of hearing it. Affirm, I am truthful because I am courageous. Affirm, I am truthful because I am courageous. Brothers and sisters, the Inya Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Inya Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Well, family, the basketball tournament, the NCAA, the National Collegiate Athletic Association's tournament, is off and running with all the other tournaments too. The NIT. The NIT is the National Invitational Tournament, which is New York. In fact, the four teams will be going to New York, I think, next week. Yeah. And they'll have a crown a national champion for the NIT. Men and women. Both tournaments have men and women. And, of course, the women's side of the tournament is very exciting because of Caitlin Clark and, you know, Juju Watkins and so many others. I mean, it's on. It's on. But as you watch these games last night, tonight, tomorrow and Sunday, and then the week that follows, that Saturday, you got a whole week waiting for the Final Four, which will be next Saturday, not tomorrow, but next Saturday. And, of course, the championship game will be next week, the following Monday. But as you watch them, you consistently remind yourself, and if there's others, that, hey, you know what? March Madness is truly a stirring reminder of what America was founded on. What's that, Brother Oshie? Making tons of money off the labor of unpaid people, of unpaid African people. Us. men and women. None of them get paid. Now, of course, you know, we talked about that name, image, and likeness shit, which I'm not in favor of. But that's money that somehow some of these young people get. And some do well with it, you know, whatever. But I'm talking about really the NCAA and all the billions of dollars, billions, have a way to pay these players in the big power conferences, the ones that bring in the money, the ones that have these stadiums, football stadiums, packed. There's some big football stadiums in college. Michigan Stadium holds over 100,000. Over 100,000 people. And, of course, Michigan is the national champion. So you know, especially in games against Ohio State, Wisconsin, Minnesota. I mean, these games, the big money. Big money. The coaches of football and basketball in those states make more money than anybody except those in private. Okay? They make more money than anybody in the public sector. Now, private, that's another story. But for those in the public sector, the basketball coach, the football coach of the major university in that state is the top wage earner, more than the college professors, more than tenure professors, more than the provost, more than the chancellor, more than, I could go on. But the bottom line is, every year, I'll bring it up. It's a hell of a quote. Got it off of Bill Maher's program. Got it off of Bill Maher's program. And then there was a little small piece on it. So, anyway, that's one thing. I'm going to read a piece. Yes, I had a couple of things I was going to do. And, of course, one of them was talk about history, you know. But I'm going to tell you, these things come and then they go. I swear, they come and then they go. Yep. Michael Harrod of the GRIO, GRIO, thegrio.com. He's a writer for the GRIO. I'm not going to play it. I'm going to read it. And it's the merit myth, or as I like title this, the myth of merit. Because merit is a myth. You know, they always talked about, you know, people earning things. Merit. They got it off their merit. You know, in this society where Caucasians dominate, and so therefore they set the parameters, they set the rules, they set the who gets merit. Yeah, it's a myth. The fact of the matter is, in a society controlled by Europeans, controlled by Urugu, controlled by whites, they dominate and they rule and they make up the merit. They say what it is. They say how you get it and how you can't. And of course, for us, as African people, we always, have to deal with the brunt of the situation. Because why? It doesn't favor us, does it? Of course not. Yeah, see, I'm doing two things at one time, y'all. cleaning my glasses off because I had some spots on them. And I got the microphone in my hand. That's right, family. Doing two things at one time. And I know I'm probably not doing them well, but I'll be all right. That's better. Okay. The myth of merit. Whiteness is affirmative action. I'm going to use Michael Harrod's language. Michael Harrod, once again, is a his name is Paul Harrod. That's H-A-R-R-I-O-T. Whiteness is an affirmative action. Michael Harrod debunks the myth that if black people worked hard, they can get everything white people get. You are listening. Okay, this is the Griot. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Griot Daily, the only podcast that mixes Kool-Aid without measuring sugar. Nah, we don't need no measuring cup. We pour the sugar into the pitcher until the ancestors speak to our heart and tells us to stop. And today, you know what I want to talk about. This, like, crazy idea that we hear all of the time. It's called merit. Today, we're going to talk about the myth of merit, specifically about affirmative action. I know you probably heard about affirmative action. I've heard about it. I've heard it being demonized. Oh, of course, you know, I got my job through affirmative action. Affirmative action was instituted in the fire department, police department, and many other public jobs. I'm not speaking towards private, because many private companies, they had to do some settling because they were exclusionary. But in public sector, when there's a public rights or public works job and you have a city where 50% of the population of the city is American African, but 80% of the people on the fire department, 80% of the people on the police department, 80% of teachers, the only place where we would be a numeric majority is in sanitation. So, affirmative action was initiated because of the exclusion of us on these public works jobs. Because the people's taxes pay for these services. And so, therefore, they should be fair. They should reflect cities they serve. If my city is 60% black, but yet the fire department is 80% white, that's like taxation without representation. And it's still fighting, family, today. That's why, even though I'm going to read this and I'm going to say some things, what am I an advocate of? What is this program an advocate of? This program is an advocate of independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. We recognize on this program that it ain't happening, family. It's not happening for us here. And it won't. It never will. Okay. Today we're going to talk about the myth of merit, specifically affirmative action. I know you probably heard about affirmative action. You've heard about it demonized. You've heard about it being vilified by Caucasian people because, you know, it's a key element in that Caucasian replacement theory that's going to be talking about in a few, that he's going to talk about in a few of his episodes. And, okay, today we're going to talk about merit because all the things that Caucasian white people, white Americans, excuse me, ever had and just kept out of reach of black hands. We weren't really that concerned with money. You know, power, justice, and equality has never really been like the ultimate goal. Black people did not desire to be equal to oppressors, the crackers. No, we didn't. And we didn't expect justice from practitioners of injustice. Like, we didn't think white people can just automatically manufacture justice after they'd been not doing it for 400 years. It was the prospect of opportunity that got us to participate in the whole civil rights movement. We didn't want to go to school with white folks. We wanted to go to the schools that gave us the best opportunity to achieve. And that was not necessarily white schools. It was the schools that we were paying for, the schools in our community, the schools that our tax dollars were funding. That's where we thought that we should be able to get our opportunity. We didn't want to sit next to white people on buses. We wanted the opportunity to sit wherever a seat was open, on a bus or a train or in a diner. That's what the civil rights movement was about. Not like getting sitting next to or being equal with white people. Nat Turner picked up a machete because he wanted the opportunity to breathe free. Black Lives Matter simply fights for black people's opportunity to breathe free. Now, nowhere is this fact more evident than in the field of education. Education, and let me tell you what's really spawned this. I saw a piece this morning on Facebook. I sure wish I could have found a way to get it. It talked about Milwaukee and the fact that the schools in Milwaukee are only 50% attendance, roughly. You have some schools where they're seating for 1,200 children, but only has 400. Some of these schools, and yet MPS, Milwaukee Public School System, is going to ask the citizens of the city of Milwaukee for $200-some million that you need to fork over in taxes. And the city of Milwaukee's educational system is deeply broken. So that's what spurred this on, and then I saw this, and I said, okay, let me deal with this. Historic and currently, it's been kept out of the reach of black people simply because of the color of their skin. Now, there's no debate about this. The average white student attends a school that is funded at $2,226 per student, more than the average majority black school. And two-thirds of black children go to majority black schools. And these are high poverty schools. Matter of fact, high poverty. Majority white schools are better funded than in this country than majority black schools in majority black rich neighborhoods. I mean, it's just the fact the education system is racist and has been for so many years, and that we could point to this. For instance, majority black schools have smaller libraries, fewer books, less technology. The smarter kids at majority black high schools can attend an AP program and international baccalaureate classes because they can't attend AP and international baccalaureate classes because they don't have these resources. There's so many disparities in the education system, but in this country, we believe that if you work hard and study and put yourself through the educational system, you too can achieve. And that's what they think merit is. That's what they think merit is. That opportunity is there for you. And lately, there's been a debate about how we can correct this inequality using affirmative action that sometimes includes race-conscious admissions policies. There's been this huge debate about their efforts to correct this inequality in education, specifically as it relates to affirmative action. Harvard uses race in its admissions, right? And people refer to that as affirmative action, right? And so Asian American applicants, they sued Harvard because they said that they were being discriminated against Asian American applicants. And what they said was, like, we have higher SAT scores than, you know, some of the black students and some of the non-students you left in. Now, if you're going to let those students in who are, quote, unquote, lesser students than the Asian American applicants, then affirmative actions is racist against Asians. Now, we're going to get to why this is some total BS. But conservatives, the people who believe in reverse racism, they push that narrative, right? And then Trump, like, supported it. He wanted to end affirmative action, especially in college admissions, because according to white people, that it dismantles the idea of merit. And it's a form of prejudice against white people. Now, Fox News is one of the biggest opponents of affirmative action. So they always push this narrative that race-conscious admissions policies discriminate against white people and then they don't say a word. I mean, you can see for yourself. I wonder what would be wrong with looking at bias against white students. That would be okay, right? I found the framing of this a little weird. The assumption at the beginning of this was, it was appalling. Okay, well, if there's bias, we should investigate bias, whatever it is. That's fine. If you have a civil rights division, then having a civil rights division for all of the humans, that's right. And then the response from the administration of, like, it wasn't on behalf of white people, it was behalf of all people. Tucker Carlson. The other factor that colleges don't like to talk about is affirmative action. The Supreme Court banned the use of racial quotas in admissions some years ago, but in real life, that decision meant nothing. Skin color remains a central consideration at every level of process. The average admissions officer, every bit as race conscious as any institution in Jim Crow South, and far less transparent about it. Yo, get out of here, Tucker Carlson. So the question is, are they lying to race conscious admission policies? And does it really level the playing field? Or did it give African-American students an unfair advantage over white students, or universities trying to promote diversity and equality? Or is it reverse racism? Well, even worse, it is this white replacement theory and white genocide we keep hearing about. Spoiler alert, everyone knows before we get into the discussion, there are four arguments that we should throw out before we begin. One, affirmative action is a quota system. Now, there are many different versions of affirmative action, but the Supreme Court has specifically outlawed the use of racial quotas in 1978, then in 2009, and then again in 2014. Institutions are allowed to use race as a factor, but setting aside a specific number of slots for black people, that ain't allowed, right? So they can't say, well, we've got 100 openings. We got about, and we'll give 20 of them to black people. Now, the second myth is that people of color benefit the most from affirmative action. That's not true. Almost every category, Caucasian women, white women, Urugu women, have been the biggest beneficiaries of affirmative action, despite their overwhelming dislike, and almost every affirmative action is enacted. Non-Hispanic white women see the biggest leaps in pay, employment, and college acceptance, even cases like Harvard, which is accused of limiting the number of Asian Americans, according to the Washington Post. It is white men who fill these slots. The third myth is that race-conscious admissions is an attempt to make up for past discrimination, and that's wrong again. Colleges and universities allow the use of race based admission policies to create a diverse student body. But colleges and universities are allowed to use race-based policies. But there was the Supreme Court case, the Regents of the University of California versus Bach. And the Supreme Court ruled that colleges couldn't use affirmative action to compensate for prior discrimination. So race-based admission policies can't make up for the past. And then the fourth one is race-based admission policies mean unqualified minority students get in and get accepted. This simply is not true. While universities might allow, like black students with lower test scores agreed to gain entrance into college, to not accept students who failed to meet the college minimum qualification standards. So like, for instance, let's say a college had a 1,000 SAT score to get into college, 1,000. Like, they're not letting black students in, with 800 test scores. What they're saying is, okay, out of this pool of students who scored more than 800 on the SAT, we're going to make sure that we have a diverse class, right? So some of those students might be black students with 1,500 versus a white student with 1,100, right? The best white students say that they have to worry about they're not getting kicked out of classes. Mediocre white people really who complain, right? Because it's the mediocre. Because those who are just way out there, they're getting it anyway. Stay tuned for part two of our conversation on the myth. Okay? All right, then let's go to part two of the conversation of the myth of merit with Michael Herat of the Griot. We'll continue the conversation on the myth of merit. Race-based admission policies mean unqualified minority students get accepted to college. That is simply not true. While universities might allow, I might as well hold up right here and take a break. So I come back from the break, I read the second part of this, and we can, go ahead and take a break right now. Let's do that right now. And we'll come back after the break and more on the myth of merit. I know many of you have understood this for a long time. The myth of merit. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on TimeForAnAwakening.com and BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Getting back to the discussion on merit, which of course is when you're dealing with a people like these folks who lie, who cheat, who steal, who undermine merit. No, merit means that you have some honesty and that you judge people righteously and fairly. And if they earned it, you give it up. But, you know, just like justice, she's blindfolded, but that heifer peeks. She peeks in the courtroom. She peeks in various areas of judgment. She peeks, no doubt about it. This is taken from the Griot, and this is the Myth of Merit, and this is part two. Race-based admission policies mean unqualified minority students get accepted to college. That is simply not true. While universities might allow, like black students with lower test scores or grades, to gain interest, colleges do not accept students who fail to meet the college's minimum qualification standards. So, like, for instance, let's just say a college had a 1,000 SAT score to get into the college. Like, they're not letting black students in with 800 test scores. What they're saying is, okay, out of the pool of students who score more than 800, we're going to make sure that they have a diverse class. So some of these students might be black students with a 1050 versus a white student with 1100, right? The best white students, they don't have to worry about this. They're not getting kicked out of classes. Mediocre white students, they're the ones usually who complain. Knowing these four things, like people still hate affirmative action, and they use this thing called merit or the myth of merit to justify their argument. So the first thing to know is that American education systems ain't never been race neutral. It's never been colorblind. White children get better education. It's a fact supported by hundreds, if not thousands, of studies by education researchers, including the 2014 report for the Center for American Progress that showed that minority and low-income children get the least qualified teachers in 2012. Schools across the country spent on average $334 more on white students than they did on any students of color. The 2015 study revealed that schools' funding decreased proportionally to the number of black students at the school. In other words, the more black students you got, the fewer dollars you're going to get. The 2016 National Education Report revealed that elementary schools with high minority populations have fewer libraries, smaller librarians and smaller libraries. Remember, we said that earlier. In fact, the poorest, mostly white districts on average have 8 times as many libraries and librarians as the wealthiest high schools of minorities. Yet, the abundance of the data is showing that inequality in America's education system, but we expect all of that data, all those inequalities, all that racism in America's education system to magically disappear after you graduate from high school, and that everybody's equal. Yeah. So when you are choosing between a black student with a 1050 SAT score and a white student with 1100 SAT score, chances are statistically that student, that black student, got less funding. He literally attended a school with fewer books. The teachers were statistically more likely to be less educated, and yet they are basically even with the white students. So if you are handicapping on the basis of reality, you would have to admit that the black student with a 1050 is probably smarter because they have achieved more than the white student with 1100.
But the second thing is merit is objective, right? It's subjective. Yeah, right. The people who oppose affirmative action on race conscious admissions, they always say that universities should only admit students on the basis of merit. They always say, oh man, the college only should consider merit. They should only consider grades and standardized tests, blah, 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 blah. And for them, you know, these tests and these test scores, that should be the end all, be all. But you got to solve this. But what exactly is merit? So besides all the stuff we say, we know that standardized college admission tests are not a determinant of how well you're going to do in college. That even determinative of how well you did in high school. Mostly what they determine is how rich your parents are and what kind of neighborhood you grew up in. According to the 2017 report by the Brookings Institute, white students outscored black students by more than 100 points on most popular college admissions tests, the SAT. But if you examine the test by income instead of race, SAT scores reflect that the children of richer, more educated families tend to do better than the poorer families. The combined SAT scores of students for families who make more than $200,000 a year is like 400 points higher than students from low-income families who make less than $20,000. And we also know that black college students are as likely to find employment as white college black college students are as likely to find employment as white high school dropouts. And the average white college graduate has five times the wealth that the average black college graduate, according to the Economic Policy Institute. We can shift a conversation to economic inequality in class. One question they've never addressed is why a black family so much poor? If we were to get a group of basketball players and ask them what method the NBA scouts would consider the tallest players would play like, well, you know, I think we should just pick players by height and the smallest players. They're probably going to argue that ball handling is more important and quickness is the thing that matters. And shooters would say that scoring is the most important factor in being a good NBA player. And you know, people who say, well, you know, I think we should hire people who have big vertical leap. But the point is that the idea of merit is subjective and is often has no correlation to the ultimate goal, the economic success of the student. Whenever anybody mentions merit based on admissions, what they really mean is things white people are good at. That's what they mean. The biggest myth in college admissions is that college admissions was never merit-based. It's never been about grades or scores or even standardized tests or even accomplishments. Money, power, and inside connections has always been a factor. A 2010 study of 30 elite colleges found that family connections to a particular institution outweighed athletic ability and grades, even minority status. If we look at Harvard, which is like a gold standard for white folks, most of who they admit are white people whose parents went to Harvard. A recent lawsuit against Harvard revealed the whole game. Y'all know, Harvard like the old gold standard. It's supposed to be like only smart people go to Harvard. But that's not true, right? A recent lawsuit showed that if you have a parent or a relative who went to Harvard, they admitted that at a rate of five times more than non-legacy parents. See, that's legacy. And that's going to the school's own newspaper, the Crimson. And all the legacies are predominantly white because, you know, they didn't really allow black people in. In 2018, the 2018 complaint says that 21.5% of Harvard's white students were legacy admissions. That means they got in because of their parents or other relatives, compared to only 4% of black students. And a 2004 study
by researchers at Princeton found that having a parent who attended any Ivy League school was equivalent of a 160 boost to your SAT score. Aside from legacy status donations, athletic scholarships, musical ability, and dozen other factors outside of academic can boost. Somebody says to get into a goal, a real good college. Somebody says to get into like a real good college. You need those factors. But whiteness is the thing that will get you in statistically more than any kind of athletic ability, any kind of grades, any kind of standardized testing. Private institutions across the country were founded by religious groups and organizations for specific purpose of offering education only to the people in that group, like Baptist colleges for students whose parents went to Baptist churches. And the idea of a merit-based education system has always been a myth. Whenever anyone takes a peek behind a curtain, one thing becomes abundantly clear. Affirmative action has always existed for white folks, because if white people didn't have to compete against black people for most of this country's history, all of the white people who got into college were getting all white affirmative action. Affirmative action has always existed for white people. Now, here's the fourth point I want to make. The first colleges are better colleges, right? The argument against building more racially diverse student bodies is seeing ways that, like, if you got all white people at a college who got 1,800 on the SATs, it's a better college. But that don't work like that. Mm-mm. So let me tell you the story. I went to Auburn University that had this huge engineering department. And every year they would have a race. They would create a solar car and have a race to see which team could create a solar car that lasted the longest and could win a race. And one of my fraternity brothers, he was in a contest. And they could not figure out how to get basically the sun, solar, to produce enough energy to power something that could propel a car. Because, you know, a car is heavy. But then there was this dude, like a 12-year-old black kid in the neighborhood. So this kid, he had a side hustle. He would build these tall bikes that were like 6 feet tall. And the only way you could propel them was because he created a system of chains and pulleys that make it easier to propel the bikes. And if you know, this kid used to love to come and hang around our apartment with my frat brothers. And one day he was like, y'all should use chains and pulleys like how I do it, and just weave through instead of just trying to use like pulleys and a motor. And the team kind of took the idea and ran with it, and they won the race. And my point is that a diversity of ideas, like you could have all the engineers in your pocket that you want, but if all of them all have the same basis for learning, you're not going to figure things out. Diversity is what creates a better educational environment. That 12-year-old brother, right on. The merit myth, or the myth of merit, really has nothing to do with race-based admission policies. The reason they hate affirmative action has nothing to do with standardized testing scores or how hard they work in school, or even white feminists. What it's about is that they're skewed white people. For the most part of this country, they never had to compete, especially white males. They never had to compete white. They always had a version of affirmative action, but now they have to compete on equal playing fields, but not really. See, they don't have to go to those underfunded schools. They don't have to go to those libraries with fewer books. They still don't have to compete, but they're still whining because they're looking for the future. They know that one day they're going to have to go head to head
with black people and non-white people all across this country. And they're deathly afraid of that. That's right. The real replacement, you know, when they did that with Charleston, you know, Virginia, with the tiki torches, you know, the replacement theory, because of their numbers are dwindling in 26, excuse me, I apologize, in 16 years, 2040, they surmise that Caucasians, Europeans, white people, crackers, Urugu, will be almost a minority in this country. That's right. Their numbers are dwindling globally. I've said this before. Europeans are experiencing negative population growth across the planet. For every two that die, only one is born. For every two that die, only one is born. And you see how of a big of an issue it was in Europe during the pandemic. Okay. We're going to replace mediocrity with black excellence. The real replacement theory, and that's what they're really afraid of. But merit? Don't tell me about no damn merit. Do you think all of those white people who are in all of those positions of power before the year 2022, do you think they're all smarter? Do you think that white people are genetically engineered to be more intelligent than we are? Do you think that there is a standardized test that was created to eliminate minorities and non-white people can somehow measure the value of a person's brain? No. And the last thing I want to tell y'all about is the idea of intelligence. So think about this. Let's go back to sports, because I like sports, and I do. I do. I really do. I like sports, as y'all know. Think about it. Think about Steph Curry. We say Steph Curry is athletically gifted because we say that Steph Curry is gifted because, you know, he can shoot a basketball into a hoop from a long way away or throw it in there. He's shooting it because it's all arm and wrist and so forth and muscle memory. It's all of that. What he's doing when he's throwing in a three-pointer from half court while he's fading away is really his mind has the ability to calculate parabolia faster, which is muscle memory, than yours or mine and almost any white person, and to send that signal to his muscles faster. This essentially has hand-eye coordination is. It is a form of intelligence, but that ain't on no SAT score. How about that little dude I was talking about who figured out somehow to, you know, without a textbook, without a manual, how to string those bicycle chains together to produce less resistance by what is essentially a series of pulleys and levers? That's a form of intelligence. How about the people who can hear a note and automatically mimic it with their voice? Now we can call that intelligence. We can call that the ability to sing. But that is essentially a form of intelligence because it is their brain telling their bodies how to reproduce a audio vibration, how to produce that sound. But that's not on the SAT test either. And it's curious that the only thing that are on the SAT is the things that white people do well. The things that they already have an advantage in, because not because they're smarter or because they're better at math or better in English, but because they got more funds in their schools. Libraries literally have more information for students at those schools, and they think they have merit when all they have is whiteness. And as always, we'll leave you with another black saying. Remember, everything ain't about everybody. And whiteness just ain't for me. Everything ain't about everybody. And everybody and whiteness ain't for me. Thank you for listening. That's my brother, Brother Harold of the Griot. The Griot. So, give us a call at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. Let me throw this out there, too, right quick. I mentioned Ra'a Nefer Ahman, which, of course, was a surprise to me when I seen that he was in the Inyasasim, has a quote that he had. He was one of the people who was on the scholars who came to talk about the Exodus. Did the Exodus happen? The conclusion, no, it did not. So tomorrow night, when the Ten Commandments movie comes on, and don't ask me, Brother Oshie, why you be watching that shit every Easter? Why do you always continue to watch that? I don't know. Maybe because I saw it as a kid at a theater. You know, they had to have intermission and everything like that. Although it was a theater that was, you know, when I was a little boy, they had ushers with red sport coats on and polished brass and so forth. But when I came like a teenager, that went down bad, family. And we went to the show a lot because we were out of TV for that summer. So I went to that show a lot, you know. But I saw that there. My uncle came in from California to see family and so he was staying with us. And so he took me to the theater. He took me to the Ten Commandments movie. And what's interesting, of course, is the CinemaScope, the Technicolor, the all of the, what am I talking about? Well, anyway. That's the interesting part of it, you know. But it never happened. It never happened. See, that's the thing about Urugu. And in the book, there's a part in the book where she talks about Marima Ani, the theology, and why in their idea of the theology. Everybody else's shit is, you know, mysticism. Everybody else's, you know, fake myth, allegory. But theirs is historical. Theirs is fact. That's why they're constantly looking for Noah's Ark. That's why they're constantly looking for things that can substantiate the history of Christianity. And in the Christian religion around this time, people do some crazy ass things. They flog themselves with razor wire straps as the parade goes down. They got the Virgin Mary hyped up and he's just whap. I know they do it in the Philippines, but a few other places as well. You know? And of course, if you've seen the movie, The Last Temptations of Christ, that was, what you call his movie? Jim Caviezel, that racist asshole. He's in the movie playing Jesus. And man, that scene where every place he's just getting his ass whooped, but it just, I ain't lying, family. God, I was like, damn, make it stop. Yeah. So, no, it didn't happen. The flood didn't happen. And they're trying to say, well, now we kind of picture that a flood. Stop it. If you heard about it, that's what you did. You heard about it. Nothing could substantiate it. And that's the thing. They're trying hard. They try hard. They try hard. First, they said the ark landed on Mount Ararat and all of the animals left the ark, and they marched to where I guess God had told them to go. You know, so if some animals, you know, had to get their ass to Australia, you know, koala bears and kangaroos, you know, hey, truck on. If other animals had to, because Mount Ararat is, and of course, in the so-called Middle East, if they had to go into Africa and get down lions and so forth, because the whole world was flooded. And what did God tell them? It'll be the fire next time. It'll be the fire next time. Am I drowning y'all out? And of course, you have Ham, Shem, and Japheth. And of course, their three wives. And through them, they're all populated. Ham, you get African people. And of course, Ham saw, because when, you know, when Noah landed on Mount Ararat, I guess he built a vineyard. And of course, with a vineyard, you got grapes. And of course, with grapes, you can make wine. And he got drunk. And it was hot outside, I guess. He saw, Ham saw his father's nakedness, and he told his brothers, Shem and Japheth, they walked backwards, and they covered their father's nakedness. Then he was told, I guess by his brothers, I guess, about what Ham had done. And his father, angry as hell. Your ass was drunk. You know, but he cursed his son, or had God, because I don't think Noah could curse him. So he had God curse his son, and there would be servants unto his brother. You know, but the thing is, even in the book, it doesn't say, I curse Ham. He curses, to be servants unto his brother, Ham's son. So there are always some things that they throw in as a diversion and some confusion, because this shit is confusing, you know. But if you believe it, that's fine. You can believe it. I think the main thing, as far as I'm concerned, over these many years, is how it has been imposed on the world, and particularly on us, you know. Brother, how you doing? Hey, Baba Butch.
Yes, sir. OT.
Yes, sir.
You know, this is a very interesting conversation that you're having with us out here in the hinterlands.
Yes, sir.
That it existed because the white man said it existed.
Yes. That's right.
My father, I told you the story when I went to first grade the first day, and the teacher told me that George Washington never told a lie.
That's right.
My father said, do you believe that?
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
So if they tell you it happened and they go about creating what they tell you happened, that's what happened according
to them.
To them.
To them. Yes.
I'm gonna leave you with that, because you done said a mouthful. But I remember okay. It goes. My father says, "Do you believe?" I said, "Well, the teacher told me that, Daddy." Mm-hmm. He said, "I didn't ask you. He told you. Do you believe it?"
Right.
I'm gonna leave that with you, man. Carry on, my brother.
Thank you, my brother. I appreciate you, Baba Butch, brothers and sisters. My oh, Baba Butch.
What's up?
I see that they're talking about naming a street. After Roger
Brown.
Yeah,
I told you that before.
Okay, yeah. I saw something
on June 22nd, they're going to rename, you know, they just add Roger's name to the all, you know, uh-huh. This Prospect Place. They're going to put a little sign, you know, this is okay. Roger Brown's Street, blah, blah, blah.
Right on.
June the 22nd, I can give you the details at a later date. Roger's birthday is May 22nd. They decided to do it June 22nd because it would be warmer for people who would be coming maybe from out of town.
Okay.
Because we all in our 80s now.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Some people can't walk. They can't see.
Right.
So trying to make the weather conducive.
That's a good move.
But Roger's birthday is May the 22nd.
Okay.
And the happening is going to be, as of now, I haven't heard anything since then, It's going to be in front of his house, 1353 Prospect Place.
Right. That's right. That's what I saw.
Between Utica and Schenectady.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if anybody's familiar where St. John's Center is, it's on Prospect between Schenectady and Albany, in the next block from Roger.
Okay. Right
but,
on.
But, huh?
Do you plan to be there?
I'm going to try to make it, man. I'm
going
to try to make it.
Baba.
I've been talking to Judy from time to time. I'm going to really try to make it if I can, because I got other things I got to do. There's a lot of, when I go to New York, man, you know, I got 5,000 things to do while I'm there, you know, so.
Well, that's home,
but I'm
brother.
Gonna, that's, huh?
But that's home. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, but I mean, that right now, you know, I'm away from home. So when I go there now, I hit the ground running, you know
yeah,
what I'm saying?
That's for sure.
But that is my priority. That's high on my priority list, because I was talking to a brother a couple of days ago, and he says, he was telling me, he said, I didn't know Roger was as great as he was, blah, blah. Well, this guy didn't play basketball. He's a football player from Thomas Jefferson.
Okay.
And I told him, I said, well, you know Hubie Brown because you worked in sports at CBS years ago. If you really want to get a definition of how bad Roger was, get in touch with Hubie. So he said he's going to try to get Hubie Brown to come to the ceremony. I don't know if that's going to jump off.
Okay.
I said, if you want to get a dressing down because of Roger Brown and his ability on the court, you go to Hubie Brown and just drop Roger's name in there and say, what do you think about Roger Brown? Hubie Brown will talk till the sun go down.
Mm-hmm. Well,
because when Hubie Brown was an ABA coach in the Kentucky Colonels, Roger, the Pacers back then, Roger used to kill them, man.
Yeah.
I mean, just kill them.
Yeah.
You see? But it's supposed to be, I don't know, I haven't spoken to some of the people on the committee, because these are people that...
We lost brother. All right. Brother Paul. Brother Irv.
Baba Oshi.
Hey, how you doing, my brother? How you doing?
Brother, I'm always doing good. I'm doing very good. I'm listening to the show.
Mm-hmm. I got cut off, so I don't know what happened.
Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, go ahead.
You talking to somebody?
No, go ahead.
Yeah, so no, the phone just cut off. I don't know what's happening here. My phone been cutting off quite a bit, so. where was I? I just forgot where. Oh, the young people, this brother named Ray Haskins, he's a younger guy. He coached LIU some years ago. They made it to the semifinals or the quarterfinals with LIU, Ray Haskins.
Mm-hmm.
And he had Charles Jones was the leading scorer at the time when he was coaching LIU. Charles Jones, you know, he's a kid. I knew him when he was a kid, but what I'm saying is Ray Haskins is on this committee along with Roger's sister, Judy, and some other people. I'm not involved with it. I'm just more or less of an outsider just making comments about different things, man, because, you know, I'm not there, so I can't be, you know,
you're not
telling
there.
These people what to do and what to say. They have to come to their own conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the last time I spoke to Judy, which is about maybe 3 weeks, maybe a month ago, it's set for June the 22nd on his block, Roger's block, 1353 Prospect between Utica and Schenectady. I think they're supposed to hit maybe 10 or 11. I'm not really sure.
Okay.
But I'm definitely going to try to make that. I'm going to try to be there because, like I said, I got 1,000 things to do when I get there. I got other things I got to run around and take care of.
Right on.
But a lot of these people, these kids, somebody dropped a hit up on Hubie Brown one day. He was analyzing one of them NBA games, and somebody came up to him on the side after the game and says, Roger Brown, I mean, and Hubie Brown just went off. He said, Michael Jordan, LeBron, all these kids that's playing today, none of them could guard him. None of them.
Well, you know, I watched the ABA. In fact, I fell in love with the ABA. One of the players was Willie Wise. In fact, the poster that I see.
Oh, Willie Wise, man. He used to kill Willie Wise, man.
I know. I know. And Willie Wise was a good defensive player. You know. Yeah,
well, Willie Wise is another guy. If you ask Willie Wise about Rodgers, he goes off. He said, "Hey, man, I ain't never had to guard nobody like this guy.
Yeah,
this guy was like trying to guard water."
In fact, I was watching there's a series where the Indiana Pacers, Roger Brown and, you know, Freddie Lewis, they beat Mel Daniels. They beat Zelmo Beatty and Willie Wise. But
Zelmo played for the Stars, the Los Angeles,
Utah Stars. Stars. Right. That's who Willie Wise played for. Utah Stars. Yeah.
I knew Zelmo.
Yeah.
But
listen, I'm going to run. I got a whole bunch of other folks on this line. I ain't got that much
time. Okay, listen, man. Listen, good show as usual, man. Keep it going. You're blowing me away over here.
Right on. I appreciate you, Baba. I really do. All right, brother. Okay. Peace to you. Have a good weekend.
You too.
All right. All right. Back to Irv. Ain't got much
Baba Ocean.
Hey.
I don't mind pausing and let a brother like that speak. Because,
oh, yeah. He's a good elder, man.
Oh my God! There's a difference between an older and an elder, and he's
yes, and he exemplifies and that difference.
he's definitely an elder.
Yes, sir.
And every time I hear him speak, I learn something that I couldn't read in a book. I learned something that and when he speaks with emotion, which we all do. I'm just saying, I'm saying the obvious,
right.
But Baba Oji, sometimes the obvious is the hardest thing to see.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's easier to fool a person than to convince a person they're being fooled. Mm. So, and that goes back to the point you were making about merit and about religion. The reason it was stated by, I don't know who stated, it was easier to teach a child than to fix a broken man. I'm paraphrasing.
Okay. Well,
You know, so it's much easier to get, like you said, I don't know why I watched this movie. I know why you watch it, because you were indoctrinated into Christianity. You were told when you were very impressionable that there is no other religion for the black man. There's nothing. If you ain't born again and washed in the blood, you going to hell. I don't care if you're a Hindu. I don't care if you're a Buddhist. But there was no question about religion, and that was it. Because in my house, this is what we do. So that was it. So once you became a man and had your own family in your own house, you explored and you found out that there are other ways to worship the God that we serve. Because let's be clear, it could be 1,000, 10,000 religions, but there's only one God. As far as I'm concerned, there's only one God, and God created all of the other gods are so far, you know, the sun god.
See, that's the thing, though, Brother Irv, that who are you going to say that is the God? You know, because there's so many names, so many different connotations of deity and so forth, that it becomes something like, you know, confusing because there's a multiplicity, you know.
Right.
And there's so many other different doctrines and so forth. But now you have the three main ones, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. You have the three main ones. And, of course,
I don't mean to cut you off, Baba Oshie, but really quickly, because I know the time is short. What happens, Baba Oshie, is these things are weaponized against you. Mm-hmm. You know, and the weaponization comes in your desire. If I find out what it is that you desire, then I can use that against you. If you like sex, I can use sex against you. If you love money, I can use money against you. So your desires are weaponized against you. And that's what enables Arugu to manipulate you. Mm-hmm. And that's why in Mother Africa, you have these leaders who are worshiping money and worshiping things and shiny objects. And they care less about the people and the people's condition. But what they don't understand is that Arugu gives you these things only to make you move the way he wants you to move.
Right.
Because the reality is you've risen no higher than your people. You're still over here scared to death and begging and fighting and killing, because that's what Arugu does. Mm-hmm. So once they destabilize your country, which is happening in Haiti, because that's what's important to me right now. I can give a damn
about a Biden and a Trump. I care about Africa because Africa is the only country. It's the richest. It's continent in the world.
The world.
Everything emanates from that. Yeah. And everything we do, this brother was on here talking about basketball. Anything black people do, we excel and we're the best at. So I'm not surprised that he came up with some people that were phenomenal because we are phenomenal people. Baba Osi.
Yes, we are.
We are. So, I'm telling you, Baba Osi, the world is changing before your eyes. It's changing as we're speaking. And that the things will come out. We may not even see them because we are planting seeds. We're in the agriculture. We're planting seeds. This show is a seed. This show is going to grow. Someone's going to come on and have a show, and they're going to sound, and you sound like Baba Osi.
Yeah, but they're going to take it to another level. They're going to be much
to take it to another next level. Because these white folks are coming from the same playbook. There's nothing new under the sun. The same thing they're doing to the generation now, they did to the generation before. It just looks different because they deal in confusion. White people deal, the biggest show on TV is a lying, stealing, cheating show. Oh, yeah, he killed him, and he killed, and he lied. That's not entertainment, my brother. Mm. Entertainment is knowledge. Knowledge is when you learn something. When you look at the show, what did you learn from the show? You learn how to be a good person? You learn how to help somebody other than yourself today? Did you learn how to? Because that's why the Bible is so attractive to people.
Hey,
the Bible teaches. Go ahead.
Go ahead,
brother.
I just want to lay this on you before if I die today or tomorrow. I want to lay this is Irv, right?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Irv, we are the highest form of existence on the planet. The black people, the African people. There's nothing higher than us.
We're first.
That's why everybody got to come to take us down.
We're first.
We're the highest. There's nothing walking this planet higher than us.
Yeah, we're the first.
Don't forget it. I'm finished. I'm out.
All right, Baba.
Baba Osi, I'm going to stop and let Brother Paul get on really quickly.
Okay.
But when I say something that inspires a brother like that to cut in and say something to make a comment, I welcome that.
You're on the right track, brother.
Yeah, I know I'm going down the right road now. That's that brother was inspired to say that, because I'm thinking it, but I may not have put it in the words that he did. Mm-hmm. And I'm just honored to be in the same on the earth at the same time as brothers like you and the brother that called and Brother Paul. I'm honored to be on this earth at the same time as you are, because we speak of ancestors. But I wasn't here. I didn't see Dr. Henry Clark. I didn't see Amos Wilson. I didn't see all these other great scholars that white folks never go back to. Well, we're going to talk about what Beyonce said. I can give a damn about Beyonce.
Irv, listen.
Yes.
Irv, you're doing rather well. You're doing very well.
You're doing great.
There's nothing higher on this planet than you.
That's
nothing.
Great.
Thank you.
I'm telling you from experience. I know the deal. We ain't nothing. That's why they coming at us 24/7, 365. They gotta take us down.
I said,
we there's nothing higher than us.
I said,
and that ain't bragging. That's real.
I say, Baba Osi, get someone else on. I can talk forever. Please get
Thank
someone.
Thank you, both of you brothers. So, appreciate y'all. Brother Paul.
Thank you, Baba Osi. Can you hear me?
Sure can.
Absolutely. Baba Osi, can you, we've got Baba Irv and Baba Butch on the phone. Can you ask Baba Butch if he's on WhatsApp, please?
Hey, Baba Butch.
Is he on WhatsApp?
Are you on WhatsApp?
Hello?
Hello, Butch. Baba Butch.
Wait a minute. Let me see what I'm doing.
You hear me? Okay.
Yeah, Baba Butch.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Go ahead.
I heard Paul ask something about was I on Wi-Fi?
WhatsApp. WhatsApp. It's a
no.
What? No. Well,
no.
I'll tell you
I'm
what.
I'm barely on the phone. Barely.
Okay. Let me try this. I'll call you later. Okay, and see what we can do. Okay, Baba Butch.
Yeah. I'll be here.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Baba Osi. No time like the present. You know what? You know. Let me just get. I know there's not a lot of time, so let me just get to the point. What I was going to say before Brother Herb came on, and I want to contribute to what Brother Herb said and Brother Butch, but firstly, what was on my mind is what you were speaking about earlier on. What came to me, Baba Ochi, is this, yeah? In your job, yeah, as a fireman, I understand that you were the captain. Is that correct?
Yes.
Well, that surely means that you've got skills in management, how to manage men. Is that right?
Yes.
You know what? I've seen a pattern when I've traveled to various places and I observe the different Black African groups which I encounter. I feel, I might be wrong here, but I feel as a whole, we don't want to work together or we don't know how to work together for one reason or the other. And it makes me think of this, Baba Ochi. I don't know if you agree with me. I played a lot of sport, right, in my whole life. My dad played sport and we played sport. I played football, I played rugby, I done track and field. I done every sport. I can swim, every sport I was involved in. But team sports, right? When you play in team sports, you don't just come and expect to be a team player. Am I wrong or right?
Right.
Yeah. So and I know you've been a coach too. As I understand it, the job of a coach is to make the team, is to observe the players and see where they fit in.
Yes.
What they're best. Yes, am I right?
Yes, you're right. Correct.
Well, I've never been a coach, but I've played sports and I know where I play. Like in football, I played, my best was on the left wing. I could play with both feet. But what I'm saying to you is that many of us have never had that opportunity to play in sports or play as teams. So we have this expectation that we know how to play in teams and how to work together. The point of sport is building team play in teams. It's building team play. It's learning how to read the game. It's learning to look ahead. It's learning from your mistakes. It's learning how to use your abilities to the best. Am I going to the right place here?
Go ahead. Yep.
So what I'm saying is, what I've realized is that those of us who understand these things know how to build teams. We have to build teams in our community. We can't just expect people to know how to work together.
Right. It doesn't happen all exactly. I agree with you.
They don't.
No.
And not only that, right? Some people, they do not know. You might be observing a person as a coach, for instance, or in a team. And you, say, for instance, a person plays on the right. You may feel after observing them, they best play on the left, mm-hmm. or they best play in the center. You understand? Because you're observing them. And I think we need to bring those same skills within the community. And what needs to happen is workshops. You need workshops to teach people how to play as a team.
Yes.
In life. And not only that, you have to also, what I'm realizing is, we have to teach people critical thinking. A great deal of people I come across, right? It's not that they're not intelligent. Some of them are very intelligent, but they really lack critical thinking. And critical thinking starts with asking questions. If you're shy to ask questions, that means you're shy to critically think. And you have to ask questions and demand an answer. You can't just ask a question and just be satisfied with an answer which makes no sense. You understand? Because that gets us nowhere. And many times we don't want to ask questions through fear of embarrassment. We don't want to ask questions because the person just ignores us and we leave it there. And we go no further ahead. We don't go nowhere. So what I'm saying is these things we take for granted and we expect that people know these things when really they have to be taught these things. Not because they're unintelligent, not because they haven't had an education. Look, I went to university and I am telling you as fact, there are a great deal of them people ain't got no common sense,
right.
Man.
You're right.
No common sense. If you talk to them outside what they've read in the book, listen, I had a doctor live next door to me, yeah? And I used to talk to him about the weather. And the guy just used to look at me in my face and I used to think, what's the matter? He did not know nothing outside what he learned in medicine.
Yeah.
Nothing. Sometimes I felt embarrassed talking to him because I realized he's gone to university, he studied medicine, but he don't know nothing outside what he read in the book. And that is madness.
Yeah.
So listen, let me
let me take this last call. Brother Lusk. Thank you so much, Brother Paul. You're right on point, brother, as always. Thank you, Brother Paul. Brother Lusk, Ted, how you doing? Only got a couple minutes.
Hey, good morning, Baba Oshia, and good morning to everyone in the listening audience. Real quick, we'll talk Monday of sorts to let you know what I've experienced with the memorial park that's been established here in Montgomery with the Equal Justice Initiative, and just share with you what I've come across as well.
Okay.
And it was a powerful program today because I'm a first-generation college student.
Okay.
And so there were lots that was on my shoulders, all right? But we'll talk about that.
Okay, so we're
going to
talk about this on Monday. Let's talk about it beforehand. So you got the program on Monday, okay? So I really want to hear about it, all about it, the Justice Initiative, the four entities now that you have there in Montgomery, Alabama. You got the memorial. You got
the Garden, yeah. Uh-huh.
All right, dear brother. Thank you so much.
We'll talk. All right.
Sister, how you doing?
I'm blessed. I know you only got a few minutes, and it was a really awesome show. And I'm just repeating the war cry, hands off Haiti. Baba, Dr. or Professor Small, you know you're familiar with Professor Small. He's
a very wise
elder and professor. Mm-hmm. I sent you a link about the talk that he had with Dr. Mott, and it was Professor James Small on another Haitian Revolution, and it's really awesome, and it's making the charge of what Africans all over the world can do to unite. In the plight to support Haiti and to be and calling it this a war. The United Snakes is really, really being very imperialistic and treacherous, along with what's going on with what they're doing in Kenya, trying to have the Kenyans. And it was just so much insight and so much information. So I'd like you to review and maybe we'll be able to talk about it.
Sure, I'd love to.
Next
so
week.
Did you send that? You emailed that to me?
No, I texted you too. Yeah, I got your home phone number.
Right.
I texted and sent you the link.
Okay, when did you do that?
I did it this morning.
This morning. Okay, good. Okay.
Yeah, it was so awesome. It's an awesome piece, and it's really enlightening.
All right. I look forward to it, Sister Avia.
Okay, my brother.
All right, you have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Peace, family.
A beautiful Hodier.
We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources. Everybody wants that they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Have a great weekend. Be safe. Shem Hotep, that means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Vahardie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Take care, family.